I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for joining us here on this Saturday morning for Tell Me Your Story, a program designed to bring you new paradigms for a new world. Today, we're going to be looking through the lens of perception. It's a user's guide to higher consciousness, and the author is joining us on the program today, Hal Zina Bennett, and he'll be sharing with us his perspectives and how he came to put this work together and some of the other things he's involved with. Stay with us.
Talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And tell me your story. Here to help you to understand and help me to understand, this program is brought to you in part by the Barbershop Quartets of the Flying Dolphin Chorus. Why not buy your sweetheart a singing Valentine this Valentine's Day? Go to richarddugan.com and click on the big red heart, and you can order your Valentine a singing Valentine this holiday. I want to thank my guest, Hal, for joining us. Hal Zina Bennett for joining us, and the author of Lens of Perspective. Thanks for being with us on this program. And for those of us here in California, Central and Northern California, rather soggy weekend. We're looking for some sunshine here and there, but right now we're just kind of wading through it, and it's good to have you with us on the program.
Hi, Richard. Good to be with you.
The Lens of Perception is one of the book's many, one of the number of books that you've written, and it's available to folks. Alternative consciousness is, it's hot again. I can't recall when it's never really been. Maybe it just drops out of the forefront or the top 10 list, but I know that there are people who are always looking to raise themselves above, if I can say it this way, the muck and the mire, whether it's the weather or whether it's current events and those types of things, and not get bogged down in the stuff of the world. Can you share with us how you have achieved it, or how you have to sort of re-achieve it from day to day?
For me, it was when I was a teenager, actually. I had a near-death experience. I had tularemia, which is rabbit fever, and this was in the 50s when rabbit fever was, there was really no way to treat it. Antibiotics didn't do anything for it then. And I was in a coma for three days. And they had actually packed me in ice to try to bring my fever down. I had this experience of my consciousness leaving my body, not being a part of my body, but leaving my body and being able to look down through the floors of the hospital where I was at the time and see my body there packed in ice, in a body bag packed in ice, by the way. And my father was sitting beside the bed. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and he'd been called to the hospital because they didn't think I was going to make it through the night. And I remember looking down and seeing how peculiar that was. That how could your consciousness leave your body that way? I was a pretty average kid at that point. And after that experience, I tried to, when I got better, following the coma, and as I was getting well, I was also blind for a period of time, about 2 months, and as I came out of it, the whole experience was so dramatic to me, and I would try to talk to people about it, like try to talk to the doctor or my parents about it. And I quickly got to the point of realizing that if I didn't keep my mouth shut, they were going to have me committed or something. But I knew that there was something there that was, very unusual. And I was pretty sure I wasn't crazier than any other teenager is. And so I really began to pursue some explanation for that, to try to understand what that was about, and the first kind of clarity that I got with it was with a shaman who I met. This was in the 60s. And through my work with him, I began to see how our own consciousness creates, how within our own consciousness we create our own reality. It's not that there isn't a physical reality. There is, but there is also a part of our consciousness out of which we create our experience of the world, which ultimately leads to a point of saying, you know, I have a lot more choice in what's going on than I think I do. I can do something about my fears. I can do something about my conflicts with other people or my feelings of limitation, my own limitations. You know, those things are plastic, if you will. They can be changed. And the wonderful thing lately is in the last 10 years, I would say, there's been a huge amount of brain research on neuroplasticity. You know that word? Neuroplasticity means that they have begun to see how our brains at any age, our brains can radically change. We can voluntarily change the content of our brains, which in turn affect our minds, or maybe it's vice versa. It's hard sometimes to tell which comes first, the chicken or the egg.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that as I've been looking through your book, I love how people incorporate quotes from other folks, and one in particular refers to quantum physics. This is from Fred Allen Wood, a PhD, who says that you can't have a universe without mind entering into it, and that the mind is actually shaping the very thing that is being perceived. I remember hearing about scientific studies being done. I'll be honest with you, I can't remember exactly what they were studying per se, but they were doing an experiment, and they were repeating it over and over and over again. But they were seeing what impact the observers, the scientists, had on this experiment. And it did seem as though when you had the event, the scientific event happen, and you had observers, the test went one way.
Mm-hmm.
And when you had no observers or different observers, it went another way. You bring back the original observers, it turned out the same way as before. So they began to, I think, realize, as you've been describing, and as we get into this program, I used to wonder myself if there was an event in the universe that happened, if it could happen exactly the same every single time. And what I began to realize was that the answer is no. It cannot happen exactly the same, because by the time you get ready to redo it, even if you do it in a split second, everything in the universe has changed.
Yeah.
It's moved. It's shifted.
Yeah.
Even as imperceptibly as our finite minds see things, it's still changed.
Yeah, right.
I mean, for example, I sit here and I'm talking with you, and as many people will observe as they see me face to face as we converse, my hands are moving all over the place, gesticulating everywhere.
Yeah.
And just that movement alone is changing the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that story, you know, that the physicists tell about the butterfly, the wafting of the wings of the butterfly. You know, how much does that change in the entire universe? Not just our planet, but the entire universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so every moment is different. No two moments are the same. That I had an interesting experience some years ago. A friend of mine, an old neighbor of mine, actually, who was a nuclear physicist, and he was working he was actually working in France at the time, and he came through, and he was, you know, we had dinner. And I had just published a book on spirit guides, on the use of spirit guides being, you know, inner beings that we basically talk to. He was fascinated by this book. And I said, why is that so fascinating to you? It's pretty far out spiritual stuff, you know. And he says, because it answers something that we've been struggling with in the laboratory for a long time. And that is that if you have an observer, as you were just saying, if you have an observer who's trying to identify difference between particle and wave, or mass and energy, you can have one observer who's looking for energy looking at exactly the same experiment at the same time as somebody looking for the particle, and depending upon what they look for, they will find that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the perception thing. What he was saying about this spirit guide thing is that if each person looks at their own lens, that through which they're creating their questions,
mm-hmm.
then that lens will tell them how they're projecting to the experiment.
You know, it raises an interesting observation as well, and that is that there's no such thing as objective observation, because
yeah.
just by your very observing and your very presence in the proximity of that which you're observing, it's subjective, because it's going through, as you say, your lens of perception. And that's one of the first hurdles that we have to begin to understand and realize. Now, in terms of more, shall we say, practical applications, and so we sort of touched a little bit on it already. We all struggle from day to day with our perception of our reality, our limited vision thereof of reality, because we don't even see the whole picture of our own world, our own little world in which we live, 360 degrees around us, you know, within 6 feet. And yet we're trying to understand the events of things going on around the other side of the globe and out into the universe. If we're looking at photographs of Mars or the Milky Way or whatever, we're still not getting the full picture. And yet we theorize. We come up with all kinds of ideas as to what we think it might be. And again, those ideas are all, again, based upon our own mindset and our perspective. Our place on our point on the circle, if you will.
Yeah.
How can we change our perception? How can we broaden it? They always talk about, I want you to go to school because I want you to broaden your horizons.
Uh-huh.
On a higher consciousness level, how do we do that? You're a student and teacher of shamanism and so forth. How does that play into the ability to raise ourselves up to see the bigger picture and have a greater awareness so that we don't get sucked down into the muck and the mire and continue to create the same stuff we've been creating over and over again that we're tired of?
Yeah, I mean, it's the main challenge, I think, of our world at this time. One of the reasons that I wrote The Lens of Perception is that I think that the question that you're asking there, we first start answering it by saying, how is it that we create our experience of the world? To what extent is it my responsibility, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the first places, when I'm teaching a workshop, one of the first places that I see it come up in people's questions is in their relationships, you know? Well, my husband does this, or my wife does that, and it really, you know, makes me angry, blah, blah, blah. And when you start working with that, you begin to see that both people are creating within their own separate individual lenses their perceptions of the other person. We never know who the other person is. The other person may never know who they are either, but...
Mm-hmm.
So that we have to start from the point of saying, I take responsibility for creating my perception of you, you know,
mm-hmm.
and be able to say, the way I look at the world, like, how do you create intimacy given that this perceptual thing is do you create intimacy between two people? You create intimacy between two people by both of them sharing as much as possible. How do I put together my world, you know? And why am I in certain areas of our life together? Why am I making you the villain? And to what extent are you a villain? You know, all of those questions can only begin to work toward intimacy when we can really take responsibility for both of us, each of us creating our own perceptions and our own experiences.
It sounds like that's kind of the first step in the process of rising above some of this stuff. We'll talk more about that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and my guest is Hal Zina Bennett. He's the author of Lens of Perception. Stay with us. We're going to continue here on Tell Me Your Story.
This Valentine's Day, give your sweetheart a gift that will be remembered for years. A singing Valentine from the Barbershop Quartet's of the Santa Barbara Flying Dolphin Chorus. For just $40, less than the cost of a dinner out, a quartet will serenade your sweetheart at home, at work, at a restaurant, from Carpinteria through Santa Barbara and Goleta. We'll present a Valentine balloon, a Valentine card with a special message, and a crafted rose to your sweetheart while we sing two beautiful love songs. Call 805-962-5876 to reserve your singing Valentine today. Space is limited, so call now, 805-962-5876, or click on the big red heart at richarddugan.com.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us on the program. We're talking with Hal Zina Bennett. He's the author of Lens of Perception, and it's very interesting, Hal, how we came to this space and time. It took quite a while with your schedule and mine. I think that we actually started trying to connect and have you on the program back in September 2007, and it's taken this long to finally bring it to pass.
Yeah, it's been a pretty busy time.
And you are involved not just in the whole aspect of, shall we say, raising your own consciousness and changing your perceptions and perspectives of your world, but you're also teaching other folks as well. You talk about seminars, but you also help people to write, and you're involved in assisting people in writing their books and various things, and we can talk about that as well. But that's part of helping people to bring about maybe their dream of writing down and sharing with the rest of the world, or just family members, their thoughts, their ideas, or a book about their perspectives on the family, whatever the case might be. So you're
right. You're
involved in other folks' lives as well, and helping to not necessarily shape their perceptions of the world per se, and at least not on a conscious level. Just by virtue of your existence there, you're affecting it.
Yeah.
And that's then an interesting perspective, that each one of us does just that. We impact and affect the perspectives and perceptions of the world by our input, if you will, into their lives.
Yeah, right. And much of my teaching with writing kind of grew out of my interest in the lens of perception and its role in creativity. So an awful lot of what I teach in the writing class is how to really write from your own life experience. So you're drawing from your own lens of perception in reality. And that's the source of our creativity. And what I find is that when people are ultimately able to draw from their own life experience, which is what we find in the lens, it's tremendously empowering, and it can radically change your whole view of life, you know. And in the writing workshops, one of the things that I do is give people what I call the four portals of creativity, which is some of the ways that we connect with the most important experiences of our lives. And when we do that, for example, like peak experiences, you know, or the essential wounds in our lives, or the masks that we wear, or divine inspiration. Those are basically the four portals. When we can look for those experiences in our lives and we tell about them, we're telling about what's on our lens. And an interesting thing that happens in workshops when people begin to work from those places, even though they're talking about very, very individualized experiences, it creates what I call a still point, which is a point that is like universal, like everybody can connect with it. Everybody in the room can connect with the experience, even though none of them have had an experience exactly like that. It has something to do with telling our own truth. You know, when we can do that, when we can come from a place of those really important experiences in our lives, the ones with a high charge to them, good or bad, that connect with our humanness, you know, they tell our truth about our life experience, then it has an incredible impact on everybody around them. I see these things like people tell their stories and the whole room will be moved to tears, you know.
Yeah.
And not tears of, oh, you poor thing. Well, sometimes it's that. But it's more the tears of discovering this level of intimacy and love in our lives, you know. It's incredible.
Well, my wife and I attended a musical event just this past evening here locally in Santa Barbara. It was actually called the Voice of Ireland, and my wife and I have a very strong draw to the Emerald Isle, and we've been there twice, and looking forward to going back many, many more times. We'd love to live there as one of our dreams, seeing through the lens of that beautiful thing. But we sit there and we're listening to this music, and they're singing. This one gentleman, he wrote a song about his travels back and forth from Ireland to the United States, and he lives here. It's his home away from home, whereas for us, Ireland is our home away from home.
Yeah.
And he's writing about the experiences of traveling getting on the plane and coming back to the United States and getting his bags and this and that and the other thing. And my wife and I are almost in tears because we're replaying in our minds the events that took place as we traveled the first time and then the second time from United States to Heathrow Airport, and then from there to Dublin's International and Shannon Airport and so forth, and driving through the countryside and all of those experiences that we had. And it was that connectedness, as you say, that sense and feeling of intimacy and feeling very close to these individuals. We even joke when we talk with some of these folks when we have the opportunity, we say, do you need anybody to carry your bags for you? We'll be more than happy to do this. Because it is just a place that we absolutely can hardly wait to get back to.
Yeah.
Love the experiences, love the people. Love the weather, and I know that a lot of folks are not real thrilled with the weather we're having. It is a little on the severe side from time to time here in the last few weeks here on the Central Coast. But at the same time, Ireland, when we went there one year, we drove up to the cottage we were staying in, which thank goodness was made out of stone, and we were getting out of the car into gale force winds.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have an idea of what that's like, but they were wonderful, pleasant, endearing memories that brought a tear to our eyes as we sat there and listened to the music. And so what you talk about in terms of telling stories and sharing our perspectives, not only that, it also adds to the listener's repertoire of stories. Because even though they won't tell the story that the storyteller is telling, it will bring up within them their own stories that are somehow, in some way, connected to what the storyteller is telling.
Yeah.
And it continues to bond us together.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the truth around it, the belief that it's not just the belief, that what makes a good story is also what the listener or the reader brings to the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have somebody who's just got their lens of perception turned off, they're not going to react to the story. They'll just be within their own head, and they won't even hear what the other person is saying. Oh, a listening thing.
Yeah.
So important, too.
And that is also, again, part of that, even though the lens is more the seeing, when we open up all our senses, all of our senses are part of our own lens, because those...
Yeah.
Those beams of light and sound and experience are all going through that lens that we're observing with our whole being, which is, I guess, what we're trying to do is we're trying to be a better observer of what's going on around us with all our senses, but also broadening the, or I guess raising up and helping to clean that lens a little bit so we can see more clearly.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, to be able to see beyond, to see the truth beyond the illusions of our lens, you know.
Go ahead.
But, I mean, one of the big challenges in human life is the fact that we come into a body that has five senses, maybe six, but that each of those senses are limited. So we're not even seeing the whole picture at our very best. For example, we only see certain colors, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We only hear certain sounds. There's a range to each of our capacities within the senses. So we're always constructing our reality from a place of limitation. Frogs, for example, can see colors and movement that the human being can't. Other animals, think about dogs and animals, prey animals, they have a whole different set of things that they are capable of doing. So even at the best, we're creating a limited view or a limited understanding of the universe. Which is part of the problem with science, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And scientists, really good scientists, are the first to admit that there is no way to really know the universe. All that we're doing is creating models from our own observations that may be close or far away from what the truth really is. If you look at science, the history of science, our view of the universe scientifically changes radically every 8 to 10 years.
Oh, yeah. I will share with people the analogy that my observation is that, just for the sake of argument, there are 10 million laws of the universe. Man knows 10 of them and thinks, aha, we have all of the answers. And then 8 to 10 years later, here's rule number 11. Now we have all of the answers. I mean, we're talking about quantum physics these days and all of these other things. And we have all of the answers. And then in another 8 to 10 years, something else will come along. And so I just say, you know what? We know what we know right now, and we'll know more later. And we need to start recognizing that fact and stop being so arrogant and building ourselves up so much so. Because on the grand scale of things, we are so tiny on the one hand. And yet,
yeah,
at the same time, there is so much out there we can connect to. And I guess that's one of the parts of this program. We try to bring about new paradigms for a new world, creating a new world. I sometimes wonder, Hal, if indeed, as we've talked here, and maybe the answer is obviously yes, you know, maybe it's more the question, how do we impact the universe by our observing it? I was thinking of archaeologists digging up stuff, and as you used the example of scientists looking at particles versus waves, and each one sees what it is that they were looking for. If you're trying to be as objective, saying, I don't care what I find, I just want to know what's under the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
If somewhere in the back of their minds, they're trying to find something that they've been looking for, and they find it.
Yes.
But then they overlook a bunch of other stuff that's there. They don't even see it.
Yeah.
And
many years ago, when I first got out of college, one of my first teaching jobs was in the inner city in San Francisco. In fact, it was O.J. Simpson's old neighborhood where he grew up. And a very, very difficult, third, fourth generation, extreme poverty. poverty and stuff. And the children that I was working with at the time, it was at a daycare center that the San Francisco had for the kids, and the, like a Head Start type of thing. And the behavior there, here I am a middle-class kid coming into this situation, and I said to my head teacher one day, I said, these children are psychotic. And she said, no, they aren't. She said, they're just the opposite. They've made an adjustment to a very, very difficult living situation, and they're probably saner than you are, and you will not be able to work with these kids until you learn to love them and to drop your middle-class perspective. So it was a challenge to me, and I began to change to try to drop my own perceptions, you know, my own lens of perception as a middle-class kid who respected their teachers and got along well with other children and who shared and who did all of these things. And so it really challenged me to change the way I looked at the world. I had to start looking at the world through their eyes. And when I did, it was like, it was one of the most exciting things that ever happened in my life. I became more effective as a teacher, for sure. And I began to see how working together that way, we really were able to change these kids. That group of kids, 30 children, moved from being traditionally the bottom of their class in school to being in the top in 1 year. In 1 year.
Wow.
And the big change was led by that head teacher who said, you know, you have to learn to see the world through these children's eyes and to understand their world. And to, that's the only way. You've got to love them first. And in order to love them, she said, interesting thing, she says, in order to love these children, you have to accept the fact that they can stab you in the back. And it's not going to change your feelings about them.
Wow. I remember going through some personal growth and development programs back in the 80s and 90s. And you'd get together for the first of what would be five consecutive nights or three nights and then two long days. You'd get in there the first night and you'd start looking around the room as they began to orient you and prepare you for the coming days, exercises and so forth. And you'd begin evaluating each individual based upon their hair color and their size and their sex and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And you would place values as to, yeah, I'd like to get to know that person. Or, you know what, I don't want to have anything to do with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And what invariably happened for me was, by the end of the program, 5 days later, I was closer to those people that I had evaluated and said, I don't want to know that person. They don't look like a really nice person and what have you.
Yeah.
And I was couldn't be farther away than a million light years from those people that I thought, I'd like to get to know that person.
Yeah.
It was one of the most fascinating experiences that I observed as far as getting to know these people. And so it began to dawn on me as I went through more of these programs that I needed to drop the evaluation portion of my program and just experience these people. And when I did that, I got to know more of them because I hadn't put up these values through which I was looking. And so it began to open my eyes up to people that I would see on the streets.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of the lens of perception, you know, of your looking at the lens of perception and understanding, man, I really distort things.
Yeah.
And what can I do to open myself to greater possibilities? There was a Buddhist teacher of mine said, talked about not knowing, being able to live in a space of not knowing. In other words, of not presuming moment of our lives. At the same time, we have to trust our perceptions, like when we're crossing a street and there's a truck bearing down on us, you know, it's a real truck and it will really kill us if we walk out in front of it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like we have, on one hand, to trust our lens of perception and yet always be skeptical of it. You know, there's wonderful, you know, Sufi stories about that, of the guy who's walks out in front of an elephant and gets trampled, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, you know, he said, well, he said, trust in God. All is God, you know, trust in God. And he said, yeah, but there's also a physical reality, and that's part of our puzzle here on Earth, is dealing with the difference between, I mean, there are teachers who say that we are spiritual beings living in a finite body,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of our spiritual puzzle or to solve.
Yeah. I know that for me, when I hear of people who have passed on, or I like to use the term transitioned to the next world, or whatever that is, there are certain times when, depending upon how they transition, the process, I envy them. I'm going, I wish I could go along with them a certain distance to see what is that like over on the other side. What is it like without the physical body? But then, of course, you know, also feeling like, but I also want to make sure that my lifeline is still attached so that I can come back here, you know. And in there lies, I don't know if I want to say the danger or the paradox, because in many instances, we can only go in one direction. We can't go back again. Once we've gone, it's like I share with people with this program. Once you've heard it, you cannot unhear it.
Yeah.
It's too late.
Yeah.
You know, and even with a computer, you sure can delete it from your list that you see on the screen there, but that does not mean it's gone.
Yeah, and it'll haunt you.
Yeah.
if you don't pay attention.
And that's why it's so important to be very careful as to what it is that you're observing and what kind of input you put in. I'm Richard Dugan, and you're listening to Tell Me Your Story. My guest is Hal Zainabenedi. He's the author of the book entitled The Lens of Perception, and we're going to continue our program in just a moment. Stay with us.
Last Valentine's Day, I gave my wife a singing valentine performed by the barbershop quartets of the Santa Barbara Flying Dolphin Chorus. I was lucky enough to be there when they sang to her and gave her a crafted rose, a valentine balloon, and card with a special message. It looked like so much fun, I became a member. So, if you call 805-962-5876 and order a singing valentine, I might be singing to your sweetheart. And for just $40, less than the cost of dinner out, they'll remember this gift for years to come. Call now. Space is limited. That's 805-962-5876. Call now. Again, 805-962-5876. Or click on the big red heart at richarddugan.com.
Tell Me Your Story is the name of our program. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us. And that is correct. I'll be out there on the 14th with three other gentlemen singing to your sweetheart. Just go to the richarddugan.com website, click on the big red heart, and you can order your sweetheart a singing valentine. It was a most extraordinary experience, and I look forward to having a little different experience this year by being a part of that group. I listened to them thinking, oh, I wish I knew the words to those songs. They weren't familiar enough to me at that particular point, even though I was attending the rehearsals and so forth, and have been involved for the last year and really looking forward to it. Hope that you will take advantage of it and give your sweetheart something really special that he or she will remember for a long time to come. Hal Zeiner, Bennett is my guest. The Lens of Perception is the conversation on the table. We're talking about a lot of different things regarding consciousness and higher consciousness and awareness and changing our lives, moving forward, bringing you new paradigms for a new world, your world. Whatever you perceive that to be, whether it's in your own backyard or your city, town, state, country, or the world in general, and wanting to make it a better place. I mean, Hal seemed to be experiencing some very strange and unusual things for most of us that we've never been through before. Whether you want to talk about economic issues or you want to talk about atmospheric issues, there are things that I honestly cannot say that I have experienced the kinds of weather, I'll call them phenomena, that I have experienced just in the short 2 years that I have lived here in Santa Barbara, almost 2 years, with what I thought were rather extremes of heat 2 years ago, 2006 in the summer. They weren't that hot by comparison to where I moved from, Phoenix, Arizona, where you can get 120 in the shade. And then we get the deluge of rain, and where I live up on the hill, the first big storm we had in early January, we had 14 or so inches of rain in one day. And fortunately, we live at relatively the top of the hill, so, we didn't have a huge runoff going past our home. But nonetheless, these are very strange and unusual times for us all. It's not like when I was a kid growing up and you'd get the occasional showers floating in from the Pacific and across California into Arizona, and it would rain for a day or two. You might get 2 or 3 inches of rain in that period of time, and then they moved on. You get some sunshine and it was nice. These are pretty severe things, and I wonder how we are creating this stuff.
Are you asking me?
Yeah. I mean, if we create our reality, if we have an impact on that which we observe, then what in the world is going on in our minds collectively that's generating these things? We got to take responsibility. That was kind of like the first step you said.
Yeah. I think that that's a big part of it. I think also that we need to realize that we're not the only mind that's involved in the whole thing, but you wonder sometimes, like the degree to which the earth seems to be affected by the consciousness of the time. We've got more earthquakes, more volcanoes, more tsunamis,
mm-hmm.
More natural disasters per month than we've seen in a long, long time. On the other hand, you can look back through the history of the planet itself, and we've certainly gone through way more dramatic things than we presently are, where almost all the life forms were wiped out again and again and again before mm-hmm. we got to this state. However, I really do believe that there is some truth in our consciousness having an impact on the earth. Certainly, we're facing things like global warming. We're certainly responsible for that. We're not taking care of the earth. I wanted to read a quote from the book from a woman by the name of Elizabeth Satouris. She's an author, but she's a futurist and an evolutionary biologist and quite an amazing woman. And she's written a couple of very provocative books, and she's also a good scientist. Anyway, here's what she says. Our biggest job is to change our whole way of thinking to a larger perspective, to recognize ourselves as a body of humanity embedded in and with much to learn from our living parent planet, which is all we have to sustain us. That's a core thing, like what we learn through the shamans, through the better shamans, is that it's our relationship that the largest truth that we can find lies in looking at what is our relationship to our mother planet. It's mother planet, you know. Mother Earth is not a metaphor. Mother Earth is a reality that if we don't take care of the planet and nurture the planet as we would nurture our own children, it's not going to sustain us for long. And we're coming to that place where the Earth is saying, whoa, you guys, you know, pay attention here. You know, you've got to make some changes here because you're not treating your mother very well.
Yeah.
And that's all part of our perceptions, you know, of looking at our perceptions. Is it really important for us to have 400 horsepower cars, you know?
Yeah, I mean, really, really.
And all of the rest, you know, it's one of the shamans I worked with that said, every decision that you make, you can simplify every decision and every choice you make by asking first, before you act, will this be improving my relationship with the Earth or threatening it?
Mm.
And you make your... And that's one way of getting beyond your own perceptions of, well, I want a big car. I want two Hummers in the garage.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and the same in our relationships. You know, will being abusive to my neighbor rather than trying to make peace with my neighbor, is that working toward improving the relationship with the planet, ultimately?
Mm-hmm. I have this image of a wet dog who is trying to get dry and stands there and shakes and is just shaking his entire body to try to get that water out of his fur. And it's kind of like what the planet is doing, too, in one sense.
That's an interesting thing.
You know, and we have, whether, you know, and I find it fascinating, those detractors of, you know, whether you want to call it global warming or what have you, who argue that it isn't real and it's, you know, this is just one of the natural cycles of the planet. And I say, so what? So what if it's just one of the natural cycles of the planet? Does that de-obligate us at all to taking care of it? I mean,
no.
My wife and I lived back in Phoenix, and in the neighborhood in which we lived, there was a house down the street that was occupied by people who were, unfortunately, we could never prove this, but you could see the signs, involved in some type of drug activity.
Yeah.
I have since found out that the home was sold for a pittance, not because of the real estate market, but because the house was so trashed, they were literally going to have to go in, tear down the interior walls, completely replaster everything. I mean, the house was going to have to literally be gutted before it could be sold again, because they had destroyed it. Well, that's no different than what we're doing when we don't make conscious decisions about what we're doing. I would rather take my vehicle to a mechanic to do an oil change, even though I know how to do them, than do them up on the hill where I live, where I have no pavement or concrete, where I have no real disposal, a proper disposal area, and then just let the oil just run down the hill because somebody lives down the hill from me.
Yeah.
And it could be me, you know.
To say nothing of just how it will eventually make its way to the ocean.
Exactly. I mean, and we've seen the disasters in that regard. Whether you take a look at San Francisco Bay and that one ship that hit the piling, or the Valdez, or whatever other examples you want to use, we just simply cannot continue down this path. One of my guests last month, Barbara Marks Hubbard, also a visionary and a futurist, has also spoken about looking at things differently. A different, broader perspective. And as we shared in our program, I was making the comment to her that it's like, I know there's another way to do things.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I just know that there's another way to accomplish the same goals and get the same results that we want. But in a better way that is better for ourselves and the people around us as well as the planet. And I am bound and determined to find those ways and to spread them and share them. And that's why we do this program. Tell Me Your Story is designed to bring about the new ideas that are out there. And some will say, well, but they're not new, they're old. Well, so old or new, whatever you want to call them, we have to be doing things differently. That's just the bottom line. And having you on the program is part of that, helping us to understand what is the lens of perception. How do we broaden our perspective? How do we clean that lens? And allow ourselves to raise our consciousness, as you talk about the user's guide to higher consciousness. And there are many, many people who are trying to achieve just that. And we truly do appreciate you taking the time to share with us. You also have a number of other books that are out there and available, and I just wanted to kind of run down a few of those titles before time gets away from us. And they're all, many of them are all spiritually based. You have Spirit Animals and the Wheel of Life, Earth-Based Spirituality for Everyday Living, Zuni Fetishes, Using Native American Objects for Meditation, Reflection, and Insight. You also have Follow Your Bliss. I love this. This is great. Follow Your Bliss, Discovering Your Inner Calling and Right Livelihood. Spirit Circle, and this is a novel. You also have Spirit Guides, Companions, and Mentors for Your Inner Journey. And then you also delve into writing with Writing Spiritual Books, a best-selling writer's guide to successful publishing, and Write from the Heart, Unleashing the Power of Your Creativity. We all have a story to tell, don't we?
Yes.
What is, in this limited time we have left, what is the first best step for us to take to write those stories?
Well, I think the first best step is to draw from your own life experience and to recognize the power of doing that, that our creativity comes not from inventing a reality so much as, you know, really understanding how important our own life experience is and how we've operated with that. I wonder if I could, you brought up some questions, I wonder if I could read some, I think it would take about a minute and a half.
Sure, go right ahead.
There was, toward the end of the book, I'm recording a conversation I had with a shaman teacher, and he said, if you too closely identify with what your lens seems to be telling you, your life becomes little more than a mere reflection of what that holds. So what's the remedy for this, I asked. Ah, good question, he responded. The remedy is telling the truth to yourself. Over the years, I've reflected again and again on this and this exchange between us, and it is clear to me after some 30-plus years of such reflection, I must confess that telling the truth to ourselves about what our lens contains is the key. We need to know how we distort our perceptions of the world around us and our perceptions of ourselves. How does the material we hold in our lens limit our ability to act appropriately or to embrace our own potentials and act upon them? We can only know this by learning to accurately read what is contained in our own lens, and nobody else can do this for us. Perhaps in seeking the truth beyond the illusions within our lens, we will discover the part each of us can play in the evolution of a greater, more perfect human order directed more by nature than by our own egos. In the process, we will come to know our true selves, hidden amongst the phantoms that have played within our lens of perception nearly from the day we were born.
And good words for thought to wrap up our program with. And Hal, I want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us your insights and your perceptions. And you can also go to Hal Zina Bennett, H-A-L-Z-I-N-A-B-E-N-N-E-T-T. com, and you can check out a lot of the things that Hal is doing, workshops, seminars, the books. You can also go to richarddugan.com and go to the radio show's page and scroll down to his interview and listen to this program again, and also click on the link next to that to take you straight to halzinabennett.com. And again, Hal, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story, and we look forward to having you back on again in the near future as well.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun.
And I hope that you have enjoyed our program. Next Saturday is going to be February 2nd, and it is a special day. We're going to have a special guest on the program. We hope that you will join us for that program. And also a reminder, our thanks to our fine sponsor, which is the Barbershop Quartets of the Flying Dolphin Chorus. And buy your sweetheart. Your sweetheart will absolutely love you to death, if you will, when you buy that special someone a singing Valentine, a special gift for a special someone. Go to richarddugan.com, click on the big red heart, and it will take you straight to the order form where you will be able to, there's a phone number there. You can call that phone number. You can print that order form and get it off to the folks. And reserve now, because space is limited and it's going fast. Next Saturday, a special guest with a special topic. And in the coming weeks, we're going to have a return visit by David Hawthorne, our Vedic astrologer. We're also going to be revisited by Joan Sabinski. She is the psychic and channeler, and we're going to be taking your calls and questions for both of those folks. And that's going to come up in weeks 2 and 3 of February 2008. We certainly hope that you will make it a part of your morning schedule just before lunchtime to share this time with us and help to build your world, a better place for all of us. I'm Richard Dugan, and again, I thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you will check out richarddugan.com. Email me. Let me know what you think of the program. If you have any ideas or suggestions, it's richard@richarddugan.com. That's richard@richarddugan.com. Obviously, the website, richarddugan.com. Check out the radio shows you've missed and the upcoming guests that we'll have in the coming weeks into February and March, looking forward to some great programs. My love to Lal, and have yourselves a wonderful day. Bye-bye.